This is the Michael K. Show.
Jim Fossil passed away today at a relatively young age of 71. He's kind of a lost figure in New York sports, and I'm just reading people on Twitter, Don, that covered the Giants. And I know that you did a lot of work around the Giants at that time when you were the Fan. And I got to tell you, to a man and a woman, everybody said he's one of the nicest people we've ever covered.
He really was. I was fortunate enough to cover the 99 team for the Fan, and he was always such a nice guy and really didn't let things get to him. And he had just a very strange tenure. 7 years, 3 playoff appearances, 2 division titles, and he went to a Super Bowl. And I don't know if he's really appreciated.
The Michael K. Show.
This team is going to the playoff.
On 98.7 ESPN.
And they did. They went to the playoffs, and they went to the Super Bowl. They ended up losing in the Super Bowl, but one of the great guarantees in New York history. And Ernie Accorsi, GM of the Giants, I think during 6 of the 7 years of Fossil's run, he's nice enough to join us right now. Always one of our favorite people. Ernie, it's Michael, Don, and Peter. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Michael. How are you guys? Thanks for having me on.
Oh, you got it. What was it like working with Jim? Because from the outside looking in to the media, he's one of the nicest people that we ever got to deal with. What was it like working with him?
Michael, that's the way he was to work with, too. He was just a good guy. The two jobs have always, have been in a situation where sometimes the GM and the coach don't get along. We never had a problem on anything, and that includes making decisions over personnel or any type of roster decisions. We didn't agree on 100% on everything, but that's when we talked it through. We always do it privately. But as a person, you couldn't work with somebody that was just better to be around and better to be with.
And I felt he was underappreciated. 7 years, 3 playoff appearances, 2 division titles. To me, what he did in 97 was magnificent. I mean, Danny Cannell go 10-5-1, win a division in his first year in New York. I wish he would be remembered more by Giant fans. Why do you think he is underappreciated?
You know, and that's a tough question because he had a 58-53 record. I'm sure there are coaches that have had winning records that didn't get a second chance, but I can't think of too many. He never got a second chance. The Super Bowl team in 2000 was nowhere near as good as the 2007 Super Bowl team. We kind of patchworked the team together. Carey had a terrific year, and Tiki was at the top of his game. So we had a good team, but and Toomer, of course, was one of the best receivers we have ever had there. But he did a great job with that team. And in 2002, you talk about underappreciated, that was the season we won 4 straight, had a 38-14 lead late in the third quarter in the playoff game. And at that point, I had been told at the Senior Bowl and other postseason All-Star games from GMs around the league that everybody thought we were the hottest team in the league at that time. And we were, we were rolling, and we had San Francisco blown out, and we lost that game. And that kind of was a turning point for him, but he brought us back after the disappointing 2001 season to have that kind of team in 2002. I don't know what the reason is. I mean, some people are just overlooked and just don't get the credit they deserve, but I thought he would get another chance, but he never did.
What did you guys think within the front offices of the Giants when he did the "I'm pushing all my chips to the middle of the table"? Were you shocked? Was the part of you that appreciated that and said, "Wow, that takes a lot of guts"?
Yeah, I remember the day so well because I didn't hear it. I was downstairs in the press room, but Pat Hanlon told me, he said, "You're not going to believe what Fossil just did," and I said, "What did he do?" And he went over everything. And then I heard it. You really had to hear it to really appreciate it. I loved it. I mean, look, he put himself on the line. And at that point, things weren't going well. And I've always felt that sometimes, anytime you create a little turmoil when things are going bad, it could go either way. But there's a chance it may go the right way. And in our case, it did. And the interesting thing about what really turned the season around was we had a 9-0 lead in Washington, and they scored, made it 9-7. They put Jeff George in the game, and he had, I think, was a fourth down, and he threw deep instead of throwing a check down. He had Eddie Murray was the kicker, who was pretty good, especially long range. If Eddie Murray kicks a field goal and we lose 10-9, you know, it all falls apart. This is right after the guarantee, mm-hmm. and that just ignited us. And then I think we won 5 straight, and, you know, then we won 2 games in the playoffs.
And was his job on the line, Ernie? Did he feel like he had nothing to lose with the guarantee?
No, I don't think so at that point. He had won a division in 97. We didn't, you know, we kind of were spinning our wheels in 98 and 99, but, you know, we hadn't really gotten him great players at that point. Nobody was thinking he wasn't doing a good job. We were competitive. No, I don't think so, but, you know, you know what happens in sports. I mean, if we would have lost 5 in a row instead of winning 5 in a row, you don't know. You just don't know what's going to happen.
Now, you touched on this in a previous answer, and it's really not fair to ask you, but you're the only one in front of us, and maybe you know the way the NFL thinks. After that run with the Giants, which is certainly a representative run for a coach, how did he never get a sniff, Ernie? Not a sniff to be a head coach.
You know, it's hard to believe, Michael, because I don't know that, you know, owners would have called me. I mean, they're going to call each other, but I never even got a call about him. Now, you know, you'd think that he would have been, and he was interviewed. I know that. I know he was interviewed in Washington. I thought he was interviewed in Buffalo, but I'm not sure. I think Tom Donahoe interviewed him, but I never really got calls on him where they were delving into him or asking questions about him. I was told by an agent, a top flight agent, that he was pretty close to the Redskin job, but that was the time that Joe Gibbs
came back
for the second act. And that, you know, and of course, I guess he couldn't, the temptation of bringing Joe Gibbs back was too great for Snyder. But I never really got calls on him. And then I tried because I really liked the guy and I knew the way the business goes. You lose a job and look how many great coaches like Bermeil and Belichick got second chances and won championships. And I really thought he deserved a second chance.
I always wanted to ask you this, Ernie, and maybe I'm dead wrong about it, but when you talk about his perception with Giant fans and beyond when he was fired after the 2003 season, I don't know if it was intentional or unintentional, but if you remember Tom Coughlin's introductory press conference, I think I'm paraphrasing his quote, you know, injuries are a cancer, let's face it. Like that, it almost felt like it was like blaming Fossil for all the injuries you had in 2003. At least that's the way I took it. Do you think that had anything to do with like the perception? I don't know if Tom meant it, but just that it kind of felt like new sheriff in town. What's going to happen last year with the injuries? Is it going to happen under me? And kind of Fossil was kind of thrown under the bus with that.
Oh, I don't think Tom, you know, meant it in any way in the world is a reflection on Jim. I mean, I think it's just that's Tom. And I don't know, but I can, you know, you guys know New York as well as I do. I mean, you're remembered for championships. And Coughlin won championships. Parcells won championships. And if you don't, you know, Ali Sherman didn't win it, and Fossil didn't win it. And they're not thought of in the same realm that the championship coaches are. It's other cities, maybe, you know, they celebrate, for want of a better word, a pennant. But in New York, you have to win a championship, and that could be it. I don't know. I can't, you know, I'm no expert on that. I'll tell you what, I never heard players, you know, nobody came into my office complaining about it. Anything they ever did that was unfair. I remember when his mother passed away in the middle of the season, and he went out and, you know, went to the funeral. I went to the funeral with him, and he came back, and the players he walked into the meeting room, and they just got up and gave him a standing ovation. He was really, really well liked by the players.
You're, I mean, you're you're known as such a really decent guy, and you sound like you really like Jim. So when you finally decided to part ways with him, was that a real difficult conversation for you to have?
It was, and I really, the only time I was involved in that in my life, because I never fired a coach. We lost Schottenheimer over kind of a dispute with the owner about the assistant coaching staff. But he came into John Mara. I don't think Mr. Mara was in the room at the time. I wasn't either. And this, if you remember, it was announced well before the end of the season, maybe 3-4 weeks before the end of the season, that he wasn't coming back. But he came in and kind of forced the issue and asked John, I want to know now if I'm not going to be back. And John pretty much told him, no, you're probably not. And so he resigned. He was obviously not going to be retained, but mm-hmm. he resigned. So because of that, it wasn't a normal coaching firing where he just cleaned out his office and left. He was there another 3-4 weeks. He coached the team. But it was really bad because we had some glorious days in 2000 and in 2002. It was great working with him, and he was such a good guy. They're really never pleasant times when you have to make a decision like that. But it was even more painful with him because he was just a genuine guy that everybody in the building liked.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
The one game that stands out to me, Ernie, and it was in a losing season, but I'm wondering how much it meant to John beating the Broncos in their undefeated season. They were 13-0, came to the Meadowlands. Fossil beats them on that Amani Toomer touchdown late. Did you ever think about that? Do you ever remember anything about that win, him beating the guy that he coached in college? And again, it was a lost season, but as a Giant fan, 20-something years later, that win really resonates with me. I wonder if it did with him.
Oh, I think I do remember how jubilant he was. Like you said, it wasn't a winning season, but how ecstatic everybody was in the locker room. And that was a glorious win. And if you remember, Amani Toomer made one of the greatest catches I've ever seen in my life. Mm-hmm. He almost caught half the ball when he dove through the air at the corner of the end zone. So it was such a dramatic finish. Beat Elway, who had a special relationship with him. He was in Elway's wedding. I don't remember what week it was, but it was late. You say 13.
It was week 14. Yeah, so they were 13-0.
Yeah, so they were getting close. And I think it meant a lot to him. I think that was a huge win for him. I mean, and he had some big ones. I mean, we beat the Steelers in 2000, and they were good, but we beat them bad in the Meadowlands. I mean, he had some big wins, especially during those two runs that he had in 2000 and 2002. And you're right about 97. I mean, I was there as his assistant general manager, and we didn't even have Kerry Collins was a top quarterback. We didn't have Kerry yet. Mm-hmm. And he did a great job with Canal, made the decision to stick with him and go with him. And he took us to the divisional title, and we almost won the playoff game. We had an onside kick that cost us a playoff game, but we almost went a step further after that. And who knows how far we would have gone.
All right. So you would best be able to answer this. You guys crush Minnesota in the chip season. Okay. And you go to the Super Bowl. Why did a team that just dismantled Minnesota lose to the Ravens?
I've been trying to answer that question about 2-3 o'clock in the morning for the last 21 years. I mean, it's one of those things you never get over. I will say this: I had not seen him play very well. I was, you know, kind of in awe of the record at the end of the year. They couldn't score. They were winning all these games and not giving up any touchdowns. And I remember when our pro scouts came back from the championship game, and I remember Tim Rooney saying to me, that's the quickest defense I've ever seen in my life. And if you remember, it started from the first play of the game. I think we had a counter on the left side with Tiki, and for a moment it looked like he was going to run for about 25 yards, and then out of nowhere, Ray Lewis dashed across the field and threw him for a loss. And I don't know whether that just stunned us into that or what happened, but that was, I would say, the three greatest defenses I ever saw when I'm my days in the league were the 85 Bears, 86 Giants, and that defense. But that was the quickest defense I've ever seen. And if you remember, and this is when someone blew a club, whether a coach or general manager, they're always going to give you statements like this. But when we intercepted that pass, I mean, we were playing against Trent Dilfer. When Armstead intercepted that pass, returned it for a touchdown. It's 7-7. You never know. Now, he's got to get back on the field again. You never know what could happen. I mean, that could have changed a lot of things, and it was called back. Mm. And, you know, it was, I think, 10-0 at the half. We were still in the game. But when we had returned a kickoff for a touchdown, and they turned right around and returned the next one for a touchdown, I knew we were in serious trouble.
Now, when you say that you stay up at night thinking about that, take us through that. Like, does it get better over the years, or is it something that you really occasionally comes up pretty regularly, that you sit there thinking, it was this moment?
No, you know why? You never get over the losses. And I think if you listen to so many coaches and GMs or anybody with a club, it's the losses they remember. You know, we had a 3rd and 18 in Elway's drive when I was general manager of the Browns that kept that drive alive, and they beat us in sudden death. And the great Beano Crook, the Quipster, who used to be on ESPN, said to me one time, they'll be giving you the last rites, and you're going to be thinking about 3rd and 18. And it's those things that they just stay with you. Oh, no, it doesn't get any better, I can tell you that. It doesn't during the years, it doesn't callous over. It's still as open as it was then.
You know what I hate to hear, Ernie, from like non-Giant fans who say, wouldn't you have rather just lost to the Vikings than go to the Super Bowl and get blown out? No, I enjoyed that championship game. I'm not giving that back for anything.
No, that game was one of the greatest victories in the home that we've ever had. I think, you know, in that stadium, I guess the one that the 17-0 victory in 1986, because it led to a world championship, was bigger. But that was such a fantastic victory to win that game. I mean, I remember that week, I knew that Sean Payton was, you know, first of all, one thing about Jim Fossil, that was the best offensive and defensive coordinator tandem I've ever been around. Now, you know, I'm not going to say it was better than Lombardi and Landry, but it was the best I've ever been around with John Fox and Sean Payton. And Sean was pretty confident, but if you remember that Chris Carter, they had Robert Smith. I mean, they had so much talent on that offense that I was having nightmares before the game. And John Fox's office was right next to mine. And one day, about Thursday or Friday, he came into me and said, we may shut him out. I said, you got to be kidding me. I said, I like to hold him to under 30. He said, we may shut him out. And we shut them out.
And also held the ball for the last 12 and a half minutes of the fourth quarter.
Yeah, with Jason Garrett. It was just keeping it alive to run the clock out.
Yeah.
Ernie, old Giant fans always wonder, well, how come they never hired Landry and Lombardi to coach their team? Did you guys ever think about Fox or Payton to be the head coach of the Giants?
Well, at the time, at the time we were doing okay with Fossil. So, let me answer your question both ways. We wouldn't have had a chance on Fox because we were winning. That's how Fox got that job.
Gotcha.
So we weren't going to, you know, get rid of Fossil. On Payton and John Mayer and I, look, we did okay. We hired Coughlin. We went through Super Bowls. But the one thing that John Mayer and I often question ourselves on is we didn't interview Sean Payton in 2004, which doesn't make sense because we both loved him. And he, I don't know why. I can't figure it out. I mean, I know that in the Coughlin was not with anybody, so we could talk to him at any time. He did the first interview, and he did knock our socks off. Plus, we knew his record as a head coach, and we both had, you know, followed him fairly closely. And of course, George Young tried to hire him when Parcells retired for the first time. And I don't know why we didn't interview him then, and he would have been a serious contender, but I just can't figure that out either. It's one of those questions you ask yourself for years.
And Fox, you knew he was going to be a good coach?
Well, I'm not going to say I knew he was going to be a world championship coach. You never know.
Right.
But I loved him. I mean, he had the potential to be one. I remember when we hired him, I didn't know, but my son was on the Maryland staff with him. And I got a call that day, and he said, "You have no idea how good a coach you are." And boy, was he right. He had it all. You can't be sure of any of that, but he projected pretty well to be a successful head coach.
Well, Ernie, we thank you for coming on. We always love talking with you. Yeah. We really appreciate it. Hope you're doing
great.
Well.
Great stuff, man.
You're doing okay. Thanks for having me, guys.
You got it. That's Ernie Accorsi. That's fascinating stuff, huh? With two guys that became really outstanding head coaches right there, but they pushed the chips to the table, and then you would never have the chance because you went to the Super Bowl. So Fox leaves, and then Peyton's there, and you know, you don't even interview him when you get Coughlin, but you can't second guess it, like Ernie said, because Coughlin won two Super Bowls.
Yeah,
weird, huh?
It's crazy. They're both on the staff, and look at the Giants' history. Imagine having Vince Lombardi as your offensive coordinator and Tom Landry as your defensive coordinator.
And then they torment you for the rest of their time as coaches.
And, yeah, obviously, when you go to – Landry goes to Dallas in the expansion year of 1960, and you see what Lombardi did in Green Bay, and Lombardi wanted the job.
Yeah.
Because he was from Jersey. He wanted to be the Giants head coach, and he begged for the job. It's crazy.
And I was reading the quotes from about actually him missing out on the Washington job, and it was such a bummer because he said George Young hired him. He had the job. It was going to be his job, and then Gibbs decides to come back, or Snyder was able to get him out of retirement, and he was just sort of, you know, had to take the L that he understood they'd go back to Gibbs, but that would have been his shot, and that was right after his run in New York, when that would have been the time to be able to get back into it.
All right, now we're all fascinated what Peter's going to admit to being wrong about.
Yeah.
That's coming up in just a moment.
A lot of people are hoping, by the way.
Yeah, a lot of people are speculating. A lot of people,
I'm
going to give you
yet.
Some of the speculation.
Okay.
He's going to come around on the Beatles. He's coming around on Ross and Rachel. Those are just a couple that I got.
There's no coming around on the Beatles. If it's the Beatles argument, hell no. I'll die with that one.
Well, good for you. This portion of the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by 2 by London, the engagement shop by London Jewelers. Pick or design the perfect engagement ring to fit every budget. Visit 2 by London at the Americana Manhasset, East Hampton, and Westfield World Trade Center. It's Kay LaGreca Rosenberg and you right here on Yes at 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoons starting at 2 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.